Welcome to the Beyond Atheism podcast with me, Nathan Alexander, and my co-host, Todd Tavares. Moving beyond questions of God's existence, this podcast asks what atheists should be doing next in a godless world.
One of the questions we continue to explore on Beyond Atheism is how non-believers can come together to form a community and affect the change we want to see in the world. One answer comes from an unexpected source, religion. Today we are taking an unusual step for our program in that our guest is religious, having helped create and grow a religion. We'll be talking about the Satanic Temple, a non-theist religion based out of Salem, Massachusetts, that was the subject of the feature-length documentary Hail Satan. The temple is perhaps best known for its legal work around religious liberty and pluralism, as well as for activism centered on after-school programs and individual reproductive rights. Our guest today is Lucian Greaves, a co-founder and the spokesperson for the Satanic Temple. Lucian, welcome to Beyond Atheism.
How do you do?
Doing well. Great to have you here today. So take us back to the founding. What was the impulse to start a religion? And when was this?
This was around 2013. And I met a friend of mine who also became the co-founder of the Satanic Temple, Malcolm. And we had a lot of similar ideas about things. And I already identified as a Satanist personally, but it was certainly nothing I needed to advertise publicly to have myself ostracized and perhaps, unavailable for employment and otherwise ruin my life. But at a time when we saw the redefinition and expansion of the concept of religious liberty to mean things that it was never supposed to mean, as a license to discriminate against other people or to give a kind of exclusive power and privilege to a specific viewpoint, Christianity, particularly evangelical Protestant Christianity in the United States, becoming such a large political movement. It seemed obvious that with all the lip service being played to pluralism, for example, Town of Greece versus Galloway, the Supreme Court found that the invocations or prayers being given before public meetings at city councils were legal, but in their ruling, they also specified that, the government could not discriminate between different religious viewpoints. So if they were going to allow prayers to be given by Christians, they had to allow invocations to be given by non-believers as well as believers from other faiths. And we didn't really see people pushing in the name of alternative religions for alternative values to those that the evangelicals are constantly trying to push down our throats. So with that in mind, the idea of then publicly identifying as a Satanist had meaning because it was going to be attached to these public actions from the very start. We were going to ask to be giving invocations at city council meetings. We're going to be asking for equal placement in public forums and all the types of things you see us doing on the activism front. But beyond that as well, it really seemed a great opportunity to offer people a non-theistic religious alternative to the superstitious indoctrination that they might have grown up with. And I think we've seen ourselves vindicated on that because we suspected that there was a large population of people for whom this would be meaningful and for whom they wanted a type of cultural identification with some kind of religious values that did not force them to subscribe to intellectually insulting superstitious beliefs. And we've built that, and we've actually had people who've come out of the evangelical experience or other religious cultures, and they felt a great sense of loss when they left that. They could no longer sustain the cognitive dissonance of claiming they believed in these creation myths or other supernatural claims, but they missed having that sense of shared narrative with a group of people. And they found that again totally. With the Satanic Temple.
Yeah. So before we get to that part, like actually making this a religion, you talk about the invocations at town halls. Could anybody just say, I am this? Or did you need to get some sort of formal recognition? Did you have to go down to City Hall and fill out a form that said, yes, I'm this religion, this is where we're located? Or were you able to do this? Can people do this without having like a tax ID or something?
Right. I understand the question, and I'm still a little confused as to how this has played out for us, because I feel in reality, you should be able to go in to the city council and say, I have these beliefs, and it doesn't matter if it's attached to a larger population of people. You've opened up this public forum, and I feel like I've got something important to say. You know, that's what they've opened the door for. In reality, it doesn't go that way. And I never thought the courts would actually have the audacity to question our authenticity as a religion after the point where we've seen, you know, the Hobby Lobby ruling, where nobody bothered to justify the idea that there's any biblical prohibition against a corporation providing contraceptive options through its health insurance policy. And yet we'll go into court and they'll ask us specifically how our tenets apply, and they'll question the authenticity of us as a religion. So at the outset, we were not going to seek IRS tax exemption because we feel, you know, we felt it was a bad policy. Churches can pay their taxes. And especially now, you have so many churches getting very much involved in politics and ignoring the Johnson Amendment. And still, there's no repercussions. And they go on further, demanding more and more from public funds, even as they don't pay their taxes or whatever else. But after a while, this was a real disadvantage to us. And we always had to cross this hurdle of affirming ourselves to be a legitimate religion. So we did get our IRS tax exemption. And now, you know, by IRS standards, we're a legitimate church and we're tax exempt. And you'd think that that would lay the question to rest, too.
Right.
But infuriatingly, we'll find ourselves in the courtrooms being treated absolutely differently than any other kind of religious claimant would be. And to me, that's it's very scary. You know, we've had some very bad rulings against us that I feel very obviously wouldn't have been applied the other direction, and shows a complete lack of neutrality on the part of some of the judges we've been dealing with. And that's horrifying. And on that front, I think people haven't paid enough attention to what's going on. People see the real clickbaity headlines about Satanists jumping into one battle or another, but often the media is remiss on reporting the outcomes, reporting on our losses, and reporting on just how ludicrous some of these rulings against us have been.
So to cover one thing, the Johnson Amendment, that's when groups that have tax-exempt status as a religion cannot have political speech as part of their sermons, correct? That's what you're referring to earlier.
Correct, yeah. It's a pretty low bar. The prohibition isn't very prohibitive at all.
No, it's never been contested, as far as I know. It's never been brought to... No one's actually lost their status because of it.
Right, and you've seen campaigns by evangelicals in particular to test the Johnson Amendment and intentionally go up to the pulpit and endorse a candidate. And it's always some incompetent asshole like Trump or something like that. And they won't lose their status. But the Satanic Temple is surely going to be held to a different standard in that realm, as we have been in every other.
Maybe we can talk about the tenets of Satanic Temple. So it would be called a non-theistic religion, but maybe you can talk more about that. Like, is it materialistic, or is there some sort of spiritual element as well?
Spiritual words like that, they're so vague that they beg for definition anytime somebody tries to use them. So I would really focus in and make clear that we don't advocate for any type of supernatural belief. We view science as the arbiter of truth claims, And even in that regard, we're pretty liberal about accepting that people believe various things, and even people who are part of the Satanic Temple might subscribe to beliefs that aren't exactly empirical or scientifically proven. But the real principle here is that they recognize that, and then they recognize that they have no right to try to get other people to believe as they do, or put a higher moral value on believing these things for which there are no evidence. So when we constructed the seven tenets, we tried to find a real kind of convergence where we thought the best understanding of the world was, and the best kind of ethics that could be defined by that. And the idea was always that if disproven or improved, you know, they could be revised. And that's why when we were going to fight to place a monument on public grounds next to where there would be a publicly displayed Ten Commandments monument, we didn't want to put in contrast to the Ten Commandments some kind of etched in stone slab of the seven tenets, because we felt that that was the wrong imagery, right? They're not etched in stone. Everything's open to revision. And that's really probably one of our most fundamental philosophical points. Any system should be available for improvement and outside information. You shouldn't set up closed systems within yourself to degenerate, you know. Diversity is key.
Yeah. I think that's one of the things that I find incredibly appealing about the Baphomet statue, which is an 8-foot. He's not quite a demon, is he? What's the background on Baphomet?
No, the Baphomet image is kind of based on a 19th century drawing by an occult historian who took this kind of idea of a deity that was supposedly venerated by secret satanic Templars within during the Crusades. And previously, Baphomet was like this two-headed god or whatever, then codified into the Sabbatic goat type image in the 19th century. But for us, the idea of this symbolism of all these dueling binaries with Baphomet, points upward and downward, part male, part female, part animal, part human, all those things kind of converged into this idea of a reconciliation of opposites that we felt was really apt imagery for its purpose, which was to put this kind of seemingly diametrically opposed religious imagery next to the Ten Commandments monument, and giving that overall message of inclusivity and, you know, at its core, First Amendment values.
Yeah. The interesting thing that about Baphomet is that he was a traveling exhibit, and you only want to display him in this setting where it shows this religious plurality.
Right. And it's funny, too, how, you know, we're fighting now to have Baphomet put up in Arkansas. First, we started in Oklahoma, where they passed a bill, their Ten Commandments law. And these, you know, both in Arkansas and Oklahoma, they're using Project Blitz type model legislation. You know, they've got their little lackeys within the House or the Senate over there, working for the Congressional Prayer Caucus or any number of these theocratic organizations. And they hand them fill-in-the-blank bills, and then they push them and get them passed. And this happened in Oklahoma and Arkansas. Oklahoma ended up taking down their Ten Commandments monument after they were going through litigation with the ACLU. And their state Supreme Court said, yeah, this is illegal. So we took the battle over to Arkansas. And now they have the fucking gall, the theocrats over in Arkansas, to say that we're just trying to get attention. We're just trying to get publicity or whatever.
You guys.
Temple. Right. The Satanic Temple is just doing this for attention. It's a publicity stunt and all these things we hear. And it's just amazing to me because they could put their Ten Commandments monuments on any given church anywhere, you know, or offer it to most people in Arkansas's public or, you know, private grounds and have them displayed where most of the public can see it. You know, we have very little in the way of real estate holdings to do that kind of thing. So for alternative religions, that's a real opportunity. But if you're going to lay those criticisms on us of just looking for attention and things like that, why don't we start questioning the motives of these very politically motivated theocrats who clearly don't need public grounds to put their Ten Commandments on, but insist on doing so anyways. And they always say, we're just trying to insult Christians. Why couldn't we look at that the other way and say that they're clearly just trying to insult secularists or non-believers or people of other religions by insisting on advertising Christianity on any public piece of land that they possibly can?
Yeah, this idea of colonizing the public space, right? Taking the public space and make it this purely religious domain, or linking the two, right?
This is no small issue. And I think some people look at it and they think, well, this is kind of hilarious and this is, you know, and it's kind of petty. And they'll see what we're doing and they'll say, that's very clever, guys. That's really great pranksterism. It's really nothing of the type. And I feel like this is kind of an existential battle for democracy, and it's going to define later on who we are as a nation and how we handle questions of inclusivity, pluralism, alternative religions and viewpoints and other such things. We're coming along pretty well until this theocratic movement really gained the steam that it has. But none of these things are a stopping point for the theocrats. Think about In God We Trust being put on the currency. There was a fight to do that. They finally got it in 1956, I believe it was. And now, you know, and the arguments at the time were that this is ceremonial and patriotic, this In God We Trust. It's not referring to a specific deity, and no reasonable person could find it to be an endorsement of religion. And we find that argument is well removed from reality. At least we see that now as the Satanic Temple. For any time we go into a place demanding equal access, if there is a public forum open for commentary related to the controversy, and you can see this in the Hail Satan film, when our chapter in Arizona was fighting to do an invocation before the city council meetings in Phoenix, there were several people who stood up at the podium during the public comments phase of this, and they would hold up currency. They'd hold up a dollar bill.
Right.
And say, it says In God We Trust on it. And their perception of In God We Trust being on the currency is that they do have exclusive license to the public square, that they do have increased privileges over the rest of the world, and certainly in the United States. And they'll use this as also a basis for their arguments, trying to argue for their right to discriminate against people based on their sexual preferences or gender identities or anything like that, their fight against abortion. It doesn't stop with these little symbolic efforts. And these little symbolic efforts are meant to be stepping stones into outright theocracy. And that's what I wish people would recognize more and more.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there is an interplay between having that sort of political power and being able to control the culture, and then controlling the culture and being able to shape the political power. But one of the weird things about it is there's also this othering. And what you guys have managed to do is find the other people who do take this seriously and turn it into a serious organization. So how did you find other Satanists? How did they come together, and how many of you are there now?
We knew they were there, you know, and I had already had quite a bit of interaction with self-identified Satanists leading up to the inception of the Satanic Temple. And for me, it started as a kid with the Satanic Panic. You know, I was hearing these stories that Satanists were cannibalizing and murdering people, and there were these secret satanic cults in every American neighborhood, and that this was an epidemic of kind of this, this spiritual mafia that was taking over to rule the world. And I was young enough as a kid that these stories seemed a little terrifying. And then I grew up a bit and I wondered, what was that? I was wondering if it was even how I really remembered it to be, you know? And then I really started investigating it and, you know, really grew an affinity for the whole concept. So I knew there were a lot of people who had similar experiences, and I knew there were a lot of people who just had sympathy for the idea of Satan as this kind of mythological character constructed to embody these types of values that we see more in Milton's Paradise Lost than anything in the Bible, which doesn't really tell a sensible story of Satan to begin with. So it was actually no surprise to me that we immediately started gaining a membership, but now we're at about 500,000 members. So we're getting close to the point where I think Pew polls are going to have to start accounting for us. And people kind of question these numbers. So I'll be totally open about how we get that. You know, people just sign up online. Like I said, people can be critical of that and say, well, that doesn't really give you a measure of authentic belief or whatever. But well, when we measure Christianity, right. We just yes. ask people exactly. poll, what yeah. how do you identify? Yeah. And also, like, we're not going to put a barrier between people and their religious identification. There's no buy-in with the Satanic Temple. There's no dues in order to be a member. You sign up online, and that's what it is. And, you know, criticize that all you want, but I've got no apologies for that. I think it's a good system.
Yeah. So how do you have different temples? I know the headquarters is in Salem. Do you have different, is it like by, I don't know, what are they called? Are they congregations?
Covenants? Well, now they're congregations. We had a okay. chapter structure, and then we're still in the process of going through a restructure in recognition of the fact that now we finally put together our ordination program, which we've been working on for years, and it consists of online coursework, so we know that our ministry is properly representing our belief system and otherwise recognize the limits of their authority to speak on behalf of the organization to preserve its integrity and those types of things. So we have a competent ministry in place, and now it's on a congregation structure when it previously was a chapter structure. And the congregations are more autonomous from the national organization than even the chapters were, because we're feeling a bit more confident in our place, and we can loosen up a little bit on any of the prohibitions we may have had before. But that said, you know, we're always just one lunatic away from disaster, right. You know what I mean? Like yes. In Oklahoma, when we were fighting to have the Baphomet monument put up, there was a minor satanic panic meltdown in Oklahoma City, if you looked at their press and what some of the people were saying, because we were fighting to do that. Now, in that same period of time, it was interesting, a newspaper story circulated around a bit where this kid, I think he was around between 18 and 20 years old, and his head full of Christian YouTube podcasts and things like that, freaked out on his brother's friend while they were playing cards and cut his head off. And he had been watching these hysterical Christian videos, apparently, and had become convinced that his brother's friend was a witch. And the amazing part about this was the sheriff was giving a press conference, and at the time, I think people were much more paranoid about Islamic terrorism. So the sheriff said that they looked into it and they didn't find that this guy who cut off the head of the other guy had any connection to any militant Islamic sects. So he actually said there were no religious... There was no religious impetus for this murder to happen. And to me, that's crazy. I see it all the time now. I have news alerts set and everything, but I see these crimes of deranged Christians. And I think, you know, 500,000 members right now, there's got to be some psychopaths among us, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Somebody's going to pull some wild shit. But if they do it, you know, somebody in the Satanic Temple does it, they're never going to say, like, hey, that, well, clearly that has nothing to do with the religion. And the rest of them are all very nice and productive people. And this was clearly, you know, a crime of passion or a fit of delusion or whatever it was. Oh, no. You know, just similarly to how we get treated differently in court, you know.
Right. So when you guys are busy not cutting people's heads off, what do they, if you're ordinated, what sort of rituals can you perform? The thing is, Lucian, we actually take, like most atheists, we take religion very seriously. So we're very curious about how the temple works, and especially like this idea of building a culture, building ritual, right? Because atheism doesn't have ritual, it doesn't have ceremony, it's a void, and we're always looking for ways to build that. What are some of the rituals or celebrations that happen in the temple?
Well, I mean, at the very basic level, there's the idea of the Black Mass, and the Black Mass is well misunderstood as being something that's, and to be clear, I mean, the Black Mass was originally made up as Catholic propaganda to ostracize people other than and justify potentially even killing them. But the idea of some of these occult practices and things like that, that may have been completely made up to begin with, later on resonate with a certain audience and carry a certain mythic weight, even if you know their history is something other than what was, you know, what it's supposed to be. But for us, the idea of a Black Mass is kind of shaking off the final vestiges of the kind of superstitious programming you might have grown up in. And therefore, something like a Black Mass is very effective for people who are just coming out of theistic, superstitious religion, where they feel like they're testing boundaries, you know, even with the imagery of a cross upside down and things like that. You know, if they have some kind of lingering subconscious fear that this is going to cause some spiritual harm or whatever, just that feeling of transgressing and breaking those boundaries. And after a while, that's not so meaningful to you anymore. There's only so much of that you can do before your mind gets it, you know. But there's other types of rituals that may, at one time or another, have some real meaning for people. We've had somebody we've worked with who's helped cohere a lot of our kind of ritual philosophy and practice. Her name is Shiva Honey, and she's put out a book on rituals that we've done within the Satanic Temple. One of them is a destruction ritual, and I saw her working with people at our headquarters where the idea was that these people would bring some kind of memento of something they didn't want in their life any longer, you know, and they go through this kind of theatrics and pomp and end up burning this object, and some people cry while they do it or whatever, and it's very cathartic, you know. And there's no supernatural belief attached to it. It just has that cathartic effect, and it helps kind of bond the community. And also rituals in the Satanic Temple are very much in line with our overall philosophy in that there's kind of a general recipe for them, but they're meant to be creative and participatory. They're not meant to be something that is a tool of authoritarian conditioning. Like, it's not like going into the Catholic Church and some asshole standing up front and telling you to sit down and stand up and recite words you never understood to begin with and that kind of thing. So to that end, you know, you can have an idea of a ritual and some basic elements of it, but they're malleable to the specific events and specific participants and what they want to get out of it. And I think that's a beautiful thing. And I think that's an element of the Satanic Temple that has really kind of taken off and been tacitly understood by the community that's come to us earlier on without it being made explicit. And I think it's something that academics have kind of missed. I think I think academics have kind of missed a lot of great periods of time in the Satanic Temple overall, just because they failed to realize that we take ourselves seriously and that we're here for the long haul. You know, nobody's going to take my word for this. Like, sometimes I look at this as though I'm on the outside as an academic, but, you know, how can I really do that? You know, I'm never going to put out the book and be like, hey, this is how, you know, this is obviously the sociology of Satanism, because I'm too much in the center of the storm.
Right. But it sounds a lot like practical magic, where it's not, you're doing something that's not directly, you have a goal in mind that you want to get to, right? Like, you're trying to overcome this obstacle. You're trying to defeat this blockage in your life. You're trying to get past something or get over something or succeed where you haven't before. And you're going, using this totem to do it, not because the totem has power, but because by utilizing it through, utilizing the totem allows you to visualize and mentally overcome it before you're able to do it in life.
So right, exactly. Yeah. And it can be, like I said, it can be very therapeutic for people. It can be something that very much builds a sense of community and trust amongst the people who are participating. And for some people within the Satanic Temple, that's an essential element, far more maybe than, you know, being involved in any of the political stuff you see on the face of it.
Are there a lot of atheists that find their way to the temple?
Yeah, and it's really interesting to have that mix. And that's part of the reason why, you know, when I'm doing interviews, I make it clear that I don't want to do a biographical sketch. I was reached out to by a journalist for The New Yorker, of all things, who wanted to do a profile piece on me. And I said, no, just because I mean, that's flattering, and that seems, you know, above my level. It's out of my league, maybe, or I don't know. But just the same, I feel like it would be insulting to the rest of the organization. And I have a real problem with the way journalism approaches a lot of these much bigger topics by trying to narrow them down to one specific person's story. I would never want to give the impression that how I came to this is the way that people come to Satanism. So we have people coming, you know, freshly out of evangelical tribes, you know, and into the Satanic Temple. We have people who are lifelong atheists and never thought that they would identify with a religion at all. And you know, in some cases didn't realize that there was such a thing as non-theistic religion. And it's interesting to see people converge here in a productive way.
Well, okay, Lucian, I have a pet theory that I've never been able to really test, but it's that aesthetics are one of the reasons that religion persists. Basically, old ladies like the way churches look, like people get married in churches because they're pretty buildings. How much do members love the artistic styles and tastes of Satanism?
That's a good question. I think the aesthetic has a lot to do with it. You know, the aesthetic gives you something to really identify with on an emotional level, on a real visceral kind of level. You looked at some of the atheist benches, you know, that were put on public grounds where they allowed religious expression. And, you know, they put these stone benches on the ground that had, you know, quotes from like Carl Sagan or whatever on it. And that's nice, but that's, I think that's lacking in real kind of, I don't know, that just that visceral connection that you can get from seeing something like the Baphomet Monument.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Totally.
Yeah. Can I just jump back sort of, you're talking about getting asked to be in the New Yorker. I just wanted to ask, like, in the documentary Hail Satan, you get interviewed by like a lot of Fox News people and so on. And I was just wondering, like Tucker Carlson, for example, but I'm just wondering, like, maybe you can just talk about what that experience was like going on Fox News.
Well, it must be said, I've got no beef with Tucker Carlson's producers and, you know, the people who called me and talked to me about being on his show. They did not mislead me at all. You know, they told me what the topic was going to be and, you know, whatever else his faults, which are numerous, you know, Carlson held to those. I can't say the same for Megyn Kelly. Megyn Kelly's people totally lied to me about everything that was going to happen on that clip that I was on there for. I was supposed to be on with Barry Lynn. Barry Lynn started Americans United for the Separation of Church and State, Baptist. And he was supposed to be on there also talking on my side against a couple of the politicians in Oklahoma. Turned out I got on there and it was just me and Megyn Kelly, and they did a bunch of vetting. And there's, you know, when they're doing the vetting beforehand, they said, "So Lucian Greaves, is that your real name?" I said, "No, and you can look up my real name." But I was like, "I'd appreciate if you didn't pronounce it on the air."
Yes.
And I was like, "But if you have to say I'm using a pseudonym, you know, go ahead." And they were like, no, that's fine. So I got on with Megyn Kelly. First thing she asked was, "Lucian Greaves, so is that your real name?" And I was like, okay, so this is the way it's going to go.
Right. Mm.
But Tucker Carlson had me on twice. And his game was that, you know, he didn't think that we had a right to put up a veterans memorial, apparently, in Belle Plaine, Minnesota, where they had a cross sitting to memorialize veterans of whichever war, I'm not sure, or just in general. And they approved us making a monument and placing it there. And then just at the point where we were going to place our monument on public grounds, they decided that, they called our bluff. So they shut down the public forum entirely. But, you know, they had told us that we were going to put our monument on these grounds for about a year. We expended these resources to make it. So we sued them. You know, I just don't think that they should be able to, you know, play along for as long as somebody challenges them and then, you know, shut, you know, take their ball and go home without any consequence. You know, we should at least have to have our monument on the grounds for an equal amount of time as the Christian memorial was there. Anyways, Tucker Carlson, though, had the problem of, you know, trying to fashion himself as a defender of free speech. So I was correct in how he would approach this. I anticipated that he would attack our legitimacy as a religion. And I think he was infuriated when I didn't really take the bait. And I kept hammering on the free speech issue of this. And I didn't really feel defensive over his insulting us as being somehow inauthentic because fuck him, you know? And I think he was trying to recover from that the second time he had me on, because it seemed like they were on the lookout to see if they could find something where, you know, they felt they had the high ground. And we had put out a press release at the time where there was the controversy related to the bake shop in Colorado that wouldn't make the gay cakes, if you remember that whole issue. We put out a press release saying that, okay, so sexual orientation is not a protected class. What religion is. So if your baker's not going to make a cake for a gay couple, you're going to have to make one for Satanists. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. you know, here's some templates for a satanic cake you can have them make. Yeah. So Tucker Carlson was thinking, I think, you know, oh, free speech again. Now they're trying to compel people to speak in ways they don't want to. And I don't think he anticipated me taking the position of, okay, fine, you're right. We don't want to force people to say anything they don't want to say. But, you know, let's make this an equal playing field here. Either make sexual orientation and identity a protected class or take it away for religion. You know, don't make special exceptions here. Don't force the gay baker to make a cake for the theocrat if they don't want to. You know, let them have that choice too. And Tucker Carlson, you can see this on YouTube. He got pissed at the end of the second one. Right. And all he could do was tell me I should go. See, he speculated that my childhood must have been horrific or something like that. And then said I should crawl back into my hole. And the most regrettable part about that is I had made a real point of being kind of polite, not taking the bait with him. But when he crossed that line, I was just ready to go with a flood of insults and tear him a new asshole. And you can see me start talking. You can see me get animated, but they'd already muted my mic and then I was off.
Oh yeah. That's an old fox trick.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, part of it is that he's a troll, so he accuses everybody of being a troll.
Yeah, right.
That's his mindset.
Yeah, I think he's really degenerated over time, too. Or maybe I just wasn't paying attention enough to know. But he says shit now that's straight up racist and very xenophobic. And I in a way, it's kind of tragic because I think, like, I as much as I hate him, I don't feel like he necessarily had to go that route. And I think it's very much the product of a dysfunctional feedback loop with his audience and with the rest of this kind of very isolated, polarized, social media-driven tribes that never really look outside of, you know, their own confirmation loop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, the real danger is that's how it's meant to function for them, right? That he's able to put on that mask and sell that because it's how he makes his money.
Right. Yeah. So he's got a motivation to go further and further down that path. But I feel like you do that, for somebody like him, it becomes real too. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know enough about him from his past, but I wouldn't be surprised if there was a past iteration of him that might be appalled to see where he's gone.
Lucian, the more we talk, the more like authentic you come across as. Has it been easy for you to sort of reach people who see Satanism as de facto evil when the ethos that you promote is sort of anything but? You have if we look at the tenets, it fits very much into contemporary liberal society. Or have you been able to, or have people been able to reach across and find common ground or just find ways to communicate with people and be like, no, Satanists are not evil. We are this. Has there ever been a breakthrough?
Oh yeah, there's been quite a few breakthroughs, and honestly, you know, more and more we see people who still identify as Christian who are really fed up with the theocratic movement in the United States, willing to speak in our defense, even though, you know, they'll be clear that they don't agree with us on a theological, symbolical type of level. They see the greater evil as being some political movement within the government trying to take ownership of what's sacred to them. And that's very apparent in Arkansas. You know, you might think, like, in Arkansas, we're just dealing with a bunch of backwater lunatics or whatever. But, you know, there's a lot of thoughtful people in the Little Rock area, and some of them identify as Christian, and some of them were even willing to speak at the podium. A couple ministers were willing to speak at the podium at that rally that you see as the climax of the Hail Satan documentary. They knew the Baphomet Monument would be on the stage. They knew I was the keynote speaker. But as Christian ministers, they were also willing to address the public at the Capitol and talk about how vital it is that the government be neutral regarding religious viewpoint. And I think that's amazing. And I think part of the success of the Satanic Temple has been based upon the outrageous and egregious overreach of the religious conservative right.
One of the other things we needed to get to was to talk about TST's ongoing lawsuit in Texas regarding abortion restrictions. Maybe you can just talk more about that. And are you able to say anything about the outlook for the lawsuit?
I've become a bit embittered and pessimistic. We've lost some lawsuits that I thought we couldn't possibly lose given the laws, you know, and the rulings have come against us completely in violation of the spirit of the law in favor of some really narrow technical reading of the law to the point of being absolutely absurd. I mean, if you want to look at absurdity, look at our lawsuit in Boston right now, where we were also fighting to do an invocation before the city council meetings. And the city council claims that they have a non-discriminatory invitation only policy for speakers in front of. What the fuck does that mean? That's the definition of discrimination. They're taking it all the way to court. But at this point, I'm not sure that they won't win with that argument, because that's how ridiculous it is. But in any case, we have a real solid legal argument in Texas, which doesn't mean by a long shot we'll win. But we're using religious liberty and our tenet regarding bodily autonomy to fight for the right to have access to abortions. And furthermore, their restrictions they've had on abortions, now they're trying to outlaw it entirely, and it might be within a month. But we have an abortion ritual, and to impede on that by putting time restrictions or restrictions regarding the necessity, which is not a medical necessity, of getting an ultrasound or listening to a fetal heartbeat or stuff and stuff like that, that shouldn't apply to us, because we don't believe in that. And when we say abortion ritual, what we're talking about is, again, something that's cathartic and enriching for the person participating in it. But the idea is that something like this can be a traumatic experience. And even if it's not, it's probably not a decision taken lightly. So the idea of the ritual is that there's kind of a preliminary counseling type of session and an affirmation that this decision was made in deference with the understanding of the tenants and with one's own understanding of their best avenue for, you know, whatever they want to achieve. And then they get the procedure done, and then there's kind of an exit counseling ritual session thing. So it's not the place of the state to alter any of that script. It's not the place of the state, I don't think, to tell us that it's not legitimate as a ritual practice or as a religious practice. And it's not their place to restrict it for reasons that have nothing to do with medical necessity. I don't think they have any arguable interest in preventing us from having access to abortion as Satanists. So we have a hearing. I think it's more of a conference that will just be kind of a scheduling conference, and they'll talk about the state's motion to dismiss, and that takes place tomorrow, and I'll be on for that. So, I mean, check my social media. I might probably give an update as to how that goes.
That dovetails into something else I was thinking of. Like, it's not just the rituals, though, that the temple provides for members. Are there other, like community outreach? Are there other social programs that you guys offer, like either charity programs or just what we would expect from a more traditional religion, a mainstream religion to provide a community? Are there other programs that you guys offer?
Yeah, our chapters and now our congregations have often gotten involved in local charity work. And that's something they always wanted to do and people were really eager to do. And I think there's a lot of excitement about that for people who've otherwise felt that their aesthetic or interests relegated them in the public's mind to being antisocial or otherwise dismissed. So there's been a lot of charity drives for the homeless, and it has been really popular to collect menstrual products for people who can't afford them and have those distributed as well, because that's something I guess a lot of charity groups haven't necessarily picked up the slack on. There's just always various projects within the Satanic Temple to that end, and it's really gratifying to see.
I mean, that's incredibly helpful and incredibly useful. And this is exactly what we think about in terms of Beyond Atheism, like fighting for this social change, fighting definitely against this Christian theocratic impulse over the U.S. politically, especially having to do it from such an oppositional position, must be incredibly difficult for the Satanists.
Well, it's funny to see sometimes our opposition
outraged that we do good works, because they're outraged that Satanists would have the audacity to do anything pro-social and constructive. It's to the point where it seems as though they're outraged not just that we are Satanists, but that we're Satanists and we're not going out killing people, sacrificing animals, and committing cannibalism. I feel like they would actually be more comfortable with us if we were doing that, because what we're doing in reality is upending their worldview in ways that make them deeply uncomfortable. They haven't had to think about where their ethics and morals come from, or if they are actually calibrated to reality and serving the greater good. You know, they've convinced themselves for so long that their morals are just predicated upon a certain set of symbols, that so long as they adhere to those, they can do no wrong. And we've seen just how depraved they can get in that mindset.
Shall we move on to we've got a lightning round, Lucian. Basically, we do this thing every time a guest comes on. We ask questions about whether a true atheist can do such and such a thing. Like, can a true
atheist... It's mostly tongue-in-cheek.
Can a true atheist say, oh my God, for example? But in your case, we wanted to modify it slightly and ask, can a true Satanist do something?
All right, let's go for it.
All right. So can a true Satanist enjoy wearing bright colored clothing and listening to smooth jazz?
Oh yeah, that ship has sailed. You look at the Hail Satan film and look at my friend Mason, who is from Arkansas and wears a bow tie and a white shirt in his interview. And that's pretty much how he dresses. And something we're also finding since the introduction of the Satanic Temple to the Satanism universe is a change in aesthetics. We're seeing much more kind of these kawaii images of Baphomet and, you know, the plushies and other cute things and stuff like that.
Wow.
And people just being generally comfortable with that because they don't feel anymore that they have something to prove with this. You know, I feel like there's a little tension at first about preserving the true nature of satanic aesthetic. But at the point where we're as active as we are and we're growing as we are and that type of thing, and everybody's, you know, just more confident in who we are, the aesthetic is also starting to change to, I think, express more those kinds of pro-social humanistic endeavors that we have that are much more removed from people's introduction to Satanism, which might strike them as misanthropic and antisocial. That said, I'm still some black wearing motherfucker, and it's just how I'm comfortable.
Right.
Fantastic. All right, Lucian Greaves, can a true Satanist be afraid of death?
Oh, sure. I think that's something everybody feels. I think everybody feels that fear. You know, I think that's something ingrained into most biological organisms is a aversion to the end of their survival. But I think, you know, we really have to strive to put ourselves in a position that when we reach that day, we'll at least be confident that we did the best we could while we were here.
Absolutely. Have you had many satanic funerals so far?
No, but now, like I said, with the ordination and the ministry, that stuff is really gonna take off. And I know we're scheduling weddings now. There's a big demand on that.
Oh, those are gonna be amazing.
Another thing that's kind of interesting in the Satanic Temple, and a lot of people agreed upon, is dissolution rituals when people come out of that kind of binding arrangement. And that seems to be something that's been totally missing from a lot of other religious groups. And I think it's just as important and maybe more so for somebody's psychological well-being to try to put some kind of closure, even just a symbolic closure on something like that.
That's a great point, because normally it's forbidden. It's expressly forbidden that you have a divorce. Wow.
Right. Mm-hmm.
All right, the next question. Can a true Satanist sing hymns?
Oh, true Satanists can sing whatever they want, but this I guess this would be the good point for me to plug Satanic Planet. I don't know if you know, but I recently put out an album with my bandmates, and one of my bandmates in a band called the Locust, another one in Planet B, and the drummer used to be the drummer for Slayer.
Oh, and, that's right.
Yeah.
That's a good guess.
Satanic Planet, yeah, that came out a couple months ago. So if you want your real satanic hymns, there you go.
Yes.
Fantastic. Can a true Satanist use the prayer emoji?
Oh, well, you know, there's all kinds of ways you can use the prayer emoji. Isn't somebody was trying to argue to me that the prayer emoji one time was a high five emoji.
Right. Yes. Yeah, I think I've heard that too. Yeah.
Yeah. They might have just been trying to fool me into misusing right. it or whatever.
Yeah.
That's the first step to converting you, I guess. Yeah, it could be.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. But, you know, I think most people use their emojis ironically anyway.
Yeah, that's true. Yes.
I mean, an eggplant. Is that ever symbolic of an eggplant?
Right. There's someone who uses it in a humble way or without realizing, yeah.
Yeah, no, yeah. I just was asking if you want to eat eggplant tonight.
What's for dinner?
Eggplant. Yeah. Can a true Satanist have a seance to contact the dead?
No.
Ooh.
But, however, as a parlor game kind of thing, with recognition that you're not contacting the spirit world, you know, when I was a kid, I learned sleight of hand and things like that. And I still love seeing that kind of thing. And it doesn't take away from it the fact that it's not actually defying the laws of physics. It's almost more interesting to try to figure out how somebody's doing it, right? What you're missing, what they misdirected you to see, that kind of thing. It's fascinating. That's why you get guys like Penn and Teller and James Randi. And, you know, even back in the seance era, you know, Harry Houdini going around debunking all of these things. So to that end, you know, over the October season in Salem, I think we were planning to do some old school spiritism type seances where we'd actually describe afterwards how these things were done and how the way we did it was the same way they did it back in the day when these spiritual hucksters were ripping people off, you know, in the early 20th century.
Damn. More great outreach ideas.
Yeah.
All right, here's a good one. Can a true Satanist say bless you after someone sneezes?
You know, I think that's just ceremonial and patriotic in that nobody could actually take that as an endorsement of religion.
Yeah. Man, these are the answers for this one are all over the place. Do you ever say Hail Satan to someone after they sneeze?
You know, I'm not the guy to ask because I pretty much don't go around people at all anymore. Since coronavirus broke out, that's it. I've been a recluse. I found very quickly after I got vaccinated and had been out a few times, I really can't deal with more than two people in a space now. Yeah. I don't have the ability anymore to kind of like filter out multiple people talking. I find myself listening to everybody at once and my head's going to explode.
Oh, Jesus.
So I'm like, fuck it. I'm staying home with my cat.
Yeah.
So basically, if someone sneezes, just leave the room.
Yeah,
that's
right.
The plan.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah. It's a pandemic. I'm out of here.
Right. Yeah. Can a true Satanist celebrate Christmas?
Oh, yeah. And that's another thing that really pisses them off. you know, I would never tell anybody that they've got to deny themselves fun. And I really do agree with the idea that, you know, Christmas can be this secularized thing. However, it doesn't mean I'm for, you know, very specifically Christmas oriented displays on public property and things like that. It's up to the individual person to decide what Christmas means to them. I think it's absolute bullshit when the government decides that they can tell other people that it's secular or doesn't endorse a specific religion because, you know, at the end of the day, you know, a lot of the Christmas imagery and things like that are supposed to endorse a specific religion. You know, you might not practice it that way or whatever, but a nativity scene, that's pretty clearly. When it comes to government property, they should stick to happy holidays. But when it comes to either having fun on December 25th or imagining that you're taking a principled stand by removing yourself from it, have fun. Like, I mean, you don't have to give your praises to Jesus.
Yeah, I think that's a great lesson. Nathan, is there anything else you want to ask?
Well, oh, we should ask Lucian, like, if you have anything you want to plug.
Absolutely, yeah.
Oh, well, you know, I don't draw a salary from the Satanic Temple, so if anybody wants to subscribe to my Patreon page, please do. Mm. You can. And if you can't find the link, because Patreon considers me like an 18 or over kind of audience guy, so they make it difficult to search, you can find the link in my Twitter bio.
Okay. Yeah, well, we'll include a link for that in the...
Yep, and how do we how do people find your band?
Oh, you know, the album's out. You can listen to it on YouTube Music, Spotify, or any of those things. But just look up Satanic Planet, and you should readily find the album and some of the articles and all of that.
Definitely. So we'll definitely link your Patreon, your band, and the temple itself down below.
Thank you.
Yeah, Lucian Greaves, thank you so much. This was excellent.
It was great talking to you. Thank you.
So that was Lucian. Todd, what did you think about this episode?
Oh my God, super amazing.
Mm-hmm.
It yes. Shows, I mean, the struggle is real, right? Like he takes it seriously. It's meant to be taken seriously. And it's both like a struggle and an experience, right? They are actually building something. I'm also reminded of like the old joke about how, you know, it's only atheists who take religion seriously, right? And even his discussion, like, and are the questions that we're most interested in, that we led with, were all about, like, what is your religion? Taking it as seriously as possible. And every time he talks about the interviews he's done, Fox News, or the court, right? When he goes to court, they dismiss his religion as not serious.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, why is it that atheists are the ones who are taking the Satanists most seriously? It's a surprise. What are some of the takeaways for you, Nathan?
I think sort of related to that, that they're serious with regard to their activism. Like, there's serious work that is, or serious goals behind it. It's not just, like he was saying, it's not just about pranks or something like that. Like the Baphomet statue, for example, wasn't just about freaking out Christians. Like, there was the point about religious freedom and religious, or like the separation of church and state. You know, should one religion be prioritized over another by the state? I mean, and just, and even the like the abortion issue in Texas. I mean, this is like real activism, and I think it's impacting like real issues. And the sort of volunteering and charity work that the different congregations do as well, I think is very cool. The one thing I was thinking about was sort of the comparison with the, like, the Flying Spaghetti Monster, which was really, that was more of a sort of parody religion and so on. But this is much, much more serious, I think.
Oh yeah, totally. And Pastafarianism, I think, does have some cachet as a religion. They were basically a protest religion. They were made to, or they started when they were mocking teaching intelligent design in Kansas, right, I believe. Right. And they said, well, instead of, you know, we want our version taught in schools, which is that it's a, you know, a giant spaghetti monster who created the world, that he's the intelligent designer and you need to teach that. But this, like, is much more thorough.
Yeah, yeah.
In part because the people are out there, right? And this is, I mean, this is a real lesson for us. He's talking about how, like, oh yeah, there are 500,000 Satanists. It's huge when you're an organized group of people like that, like-minded individuals. 500,000 people is massive. And when we think about atheists in total, in the U.S., we're talking about 25% of the country.
Yeah, or nuns, yeah.
Yeah, or nuns, right? People, non-believers. So, like, if there's something that you want to do, if you want to contribute to this struggle, the people are out there, right? And Lucian found a very creative way to energize them, bring them together, unite under common goals, and it's going to produce the changes that they want. And we need this sort of position. So this is something that, I mean, I think we should support. What about you, Nathan? Is this, do you support these particular struggles?
Definitely, definitely. Yes, definitely. Yeah, I think they're definitely doing good work. And I think also, I mean, beyond just sort of the legal activism, I mean, I think it's interesting, like you was talking about the different kind of ceremonies they did. I mean, like, that's another important function, I suppose, for these sorts of groups to take over these kind of rituals or maybe create new rituals.
Like the dissolution one. I never even thought of that. I love it. That's great. We didn't get into the theology and the philosophy of it, but the idea of like a materialist religion, right? That's not something that I had seen before. Like, it's a non-theist religion. So, it opens up this realm of possibilities that is really astounding. And all of this, of course, exists beyond atheism. Right? We've gotten this far. What is the next step that we're going to do as atheists? What is our plan of action? What do we organize around? This is one way to do it. It doesn't have to be this way. But if you want to contribute to this, the links will be below. We know that Lucian himself has a Patreon page. You can check out his band. Is it as good as Red Japan? I don't know.
It's possible to we'll say. See.
One of them is the drummer from Slayer. I don't know. We'll see. Well, we'll see. You have to give a listen to both to really understand.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the temple itself. Their legal struggles. Also, if you're looking to form a congregation, join a congregation, that's where you would do it. Other plugs, Nathan, anything else coming up of interest that we need to talk about?
One thing we're doing is we're starting our own Patreon page, and we're going to have different tiers, and there'll be different things available for each tier. So definitely we encourage people to check that out. And if you think what we're doing is interesting and valuable, then please contribute in any amount is much appreciated.
Absolutely. And we'll try to add as much as we can over time. On a more personal note, anything you need to plug this week, Nathan?
No, just follow me on Twitter and send any complaints to me, I guess, as well.
You beat me to it.
Yeah.
I was going to complain. It's like if Satan starts bothering you in the middle of the night.
Yeah. Right, yes.
Nathan Alexander. Yeah. There we go.
Yeah. Nath G. Alexander. Yes.
Yeah. That's where everything's at. Otherwise, what? Smash? We smash and pull?
Smash the rate and review button.
Smash the rate. Oh, God. This stuff is so silly. All right. Yeah. Smash the rate and review button. Pull the string. Kick the dog? Is that one of them? That can't be right.
No, that's
this must be old copy I'm reading. Rate, review, like, dislike.
Don't dislike.
Don't dislike. No, don't dislike. Subscribe and come back next week and we'll have more.